Beside open forgiveness.
When
shattering stigma
totally in later. Out of touch.
I'm named Lindsay, and my mission is to end the sun.
The
shame surrounding suicide.
And
we talk about the hard stuff. Because asking for help should be as easy as ordering a coffee. Here, we share real stories of those who lost someone, survived an attempt, live with ideations, or battle mental health challenges. Why? Because sharing your burden can lighten others. Please know, Suicide Then Forgiveness, the podcast of education, some of the subject matter could be triggering for those who are either grieving or having mental health problems. If you're in Northern Europe, you can text 988 for immediate support. And if you're elsewhere, please reach out to your local suicide hotline or mental health. You matter. My aim is to normalize the conversation so you feel safe enough to ask for help. Now, let's start the show. Hello there. It's good to be back, and today I have a lovely guest with me all the way from the UK. Tracy Barraclough is here with me. Thank you so much. It's so lovely to see you. And I realize it's a little late there.
Way past my bedtime. I need my beauty sleeping delayed.
I think you look lovely.
Thanks.
Tracy, tell us a little bit about Tracy, and then we'll get into her story. But first, let's hear a little bit about her.
Thanks for having me on the way. It is a privilege. I speak of my brother a lot who took his own life. I feel that I need to hear the word suicide more, because I've resisted that for a long time. There's something about it that makes me cringe, I think, on that word. So more often than not, I will say that it's own life. I've also saying the word suicide doesn't encourage more people to do, if that makes sense. I'm an overcomer, a survivor. I'm also a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm a mum. I'm a non-a to Elsie, who's two, and my brother, let me say, he's like 33 years old. Emotional already. We've got going. It's okay. It doesn't. I'm comfortable with that. And he was only 24 at the time. And much had happened in a really short, intense space of time. And I remember him coming to see me in the flat where I lived, at the apartment, as probably you guys say. And it was, he used to say to me, our lass, he said, I've stuck out the girl. It'd broken up anyway. And it was still bothering him. Done that thing that many of us may have, and I certainly have done it, where you've got a few of their things, their tapes, that's how long it was, or CDs, or whatever, a hairbrush or something ridiculous. And I've got these things, and what think I need to do? And I said, look, why don't you just go see it? And I've got these things, I'm bringing them back. And that's what he did. Excuse me. And actually, when he got there, what was, she'd gone upstairs for something, let him and everything, and she'd gone upstairs or into another room. He saw on the fridge a calendar, and forgive me if sometimes can't find my words. I'm a bit brained. Hospital appointment. And the upshot of it was, she was pregnant, and it transpired that he was the dad. And I think she was pretty far on. exactly anymore because I wasn't there 3 years ago. Of course, a lot of it I do remember, but that's the sort of gist of it. Then there's not the only potential dad fakes. So a lot of stuff there. They did get together. It happened in that short time. And he had a really successful business. And I don't know if some of you guys have car boots. Sure you do, or something similar.
Yeah, they're called garage sales.
Garage sales. So same thing. My dad, at the time, an entrepreneur, he got sorted out, organised the first car boot sale in our area. It was the very first one. It was huge. And my brother, who's called Nicky or Nicholas, but we call him, had a burger van on the site where car boot sale was. And he made it an absolute killing because this round every Sunday and it got bigger and bigger. And so he made all money. And at the time, made in total £10,000. Don't know what the equivalent is now, but it were a lot then. But 30 odd years ago, it'd be a lot more now, wouldn't it? And started to unravel, I think, because he cashed in, withdrew all the account, back together. He took her on a home to Jamaica. By this time, she was pretty heavily. And I remember him that was scared when he was in Jamaica. I think he felt quite vulnerable. She was so heavily pregnant, all these things happened. And we were like, what the hell has he drawn out all his money? But that's what he chose to do. And then, thing we know, he's organising a dinner. And that was October. They got married. 2 weeks later, she was born. And she's 33. She's so beautiful. And by the Christmas, it was all over. It was all over. So he'd had to back and live with our. And at the time, my dad, a really big house and 6 bedroom. He pulled another one thing. I know I'm set, but there was plenty of room for him. But he wanted to be there, of course. He wanted to be with his wife and his bit. And from Christmas Day, the picture that I choose of him, because it's so personal to me. Sometimes I think when I'm putting it on social media, I think people can be so bored, photographed. Point I made is that he was a good-looking guy. And I know I'm bad, but I've got eyes as well. He looked like a guy out of a pop band. Got another brother. There were only 50 between them. And there was 5 guys that used to come together, and they literally looked as Miami Vice, a boy band, all wrapped into one. They were just gorgeous. In this photograph, it's Christmas Day. He'd been to pick the baby up actually. And he'd come back to my dad's. I was there at my dad's well, and I was supposed to be going to his for a Christmas dinner. That was the arrangement. See, he seemed his normal self. And in that photograph, he's actually got the baby on his lap. And of course, she was born at the end of the October. This was Christmas Day, so just weeks old. The point I made with the photograph is that he's smiling and he looks just you or I maybe would in a photograph, and we put a smile on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we said it's time to go, so said bye to my dad, got in the car, and I'm thinking I'm going back to his house for Christmas dinner. This was at his wife's house, so that's a bit vague to me now, but he starts driving, and then he starts saying to me, I've got something to tell you, Alice. There isn't going to be a Christmas dinner. Things are really bad. And I think my understanding, and I don't want to make assumptions or jump to conclusions about her. And I wasn't there, any of us. I wasn't there in their relationship. And all I could think about was myself, because I'm, what the hell? It's Christmas Day. What am I going to do now? And I felt really upset for me. And I couldn't get my head around it. And I didn't know what to think anyway, except what am I going to do? I didn't want to be at my dad's for Christmas Day because that family would be there and I never enjoyed it from that point of view. So I just asked him to drop me off at a friend's, which he did. Anyway, you know what? After calling at my friend's and I just stayed for a drink, I can't even remember what happened the rest of the day, except I was just fuming with him, upset and pissed off, quite frankly. And things went a bit downhill then from there with me and him. I know that I was off with him. I was off. Because I just thought, my brother has really teed me off. And it was Christmas Day and I was just wrapped up in myself. Anybody would be. Never occurred to me that, oh God, is he all right? What's going on? And it just blew my mind. Anyway, I was never really right with him after that. And then there was a point then as well when he asked me if I'd share an apartment with him. And I was like, are you kidding me? We'd end up killing each other. I can't think of anything worse. And of course, I do allow myself occasionally to think about that. I try not to dwell on things because sometimes I know it's not the place to go, because I don't like to think where I'd end up. All I mean by that is I won't be doing anything dramatic. I love my life anyway. But I do think to myself, gosh, oh God, I wonder how different things would have been if I had gone to live with him and share a place with him. But all I was thinking was big sister. You know, we often argued like siblings do, just all very, very normal. But I thought, I don't know, how different would it have been? And none of us know, do we? None of us know. And then I was still cool with him. And then his wife was stirring the pot, for want of a better word. And the upshot of all that was we seemed to be siding with his wife and going against him, because he was our Nicky, driving us all mad and annoying us all and all these things. I look back now, I'm reflecting as I'm talking to you, and I think he must have felt so alone.
Yeah.
And then it was not long after that, it was Mother's Day in the UK. And me and Nicky, I don't know what my other brother was doing actually at the time, but me and Nicky and my mum and my stepdad all went out for a Mother's Day drink, Mother's Day lunch or something like that. And I remember Nicky putting his head on my shoulder. And I remember thinking, what's up with him? Never done anything like that before. My mum was a usual critical self about what he had or hadn't bought her, something like that. And then he bought us all drinks. And after putting his head on the shoulder business, and I just thought, what's going on? I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't specify anything. It was just, what the hell's up with him being so loving and nice and all of those things. That will have been March, I guess. This is 1992. And then on April the 13th, 1992, he was at my dad's and he was planning it for about 2 weeks, I would have said. And I don't know about your experiences, Elaine, but perception of it is that somebody might disagree, that's fine. My perception is that nothing, they don't do anything on a whim. I feel that they plan quite meticulously.
Very often that is the case.
Yeah, that's right. I'm only speaking from my experience. That's all you can base it on, isn't it? And the things that I've come to understand since. Anyway, he'd taken a hose pipe out of my dad's garage. And he drove about between 6 and 8 miles, close to where he'd been living with his wife, but it was quite remote. He drove down this remote, a farm track. The chances of anybody seeing him will have been virtually, yeah, carbon monoxide poisoning. And he'd left 4 suicide notes. And one was, I think, and I still got them to this day. And I went through a phase of, I was onto these notes. And I actually wanted to pass them on to my son, which now seems the which weird thought process ever, but I felt as though I was, if I let go of these notes, then I was letting go of my brother.
Yeah.
And they are pretty harrowing.
Oh, yeah.
But at the time I went for counselling, and if I can hold that thought, what also happened in between is that my mum was terminally ill at the time. Can you believe that? She was on borrowed time. She got terminal ovarian cancer.
Oh.
So all that going on. And I was seeing a hypnotherapist to get me through. And this hypnotherapist was no longer with us. My brother, Nicky, had been to see him. Nicky did try and get help. He tried to reach out. He went to see a psychiatrist and that didn't work for him. And then he went to see this hypnotherapist who my mum was going to as well. And then I'd been going to him. And I knew him quite well, the guy, called him Mike. And he said to him, I do remember him saying to me, I am concerned about Nicky's mental health at the moment. Now, I'm now a hypnotherapist myself. So I know that we don't break confidences unless we feel that person or a third party is at risk.
Yeah.
He clearly felt he was at risk. To add to that story, my Nicky was actually fathered by my godfather.
Oh.
The skeletons in the closet had started coming out. His biological father was my dad's best friend. Yeah. And him and my mum had an affair when my dad was briefly away.
Wow.
Hi, Elaine. Did I cut off then? I might have done because my app's closed down at a second.
No, you're good.
Okay, good. All that had started coming out because another time Nicky went out for lunch and he said, oh, Matt, he said, something really weird's been happening. And I said, oh, yeah. Now, by this time, I knew about my godfather and my mum.
Okay.
But what I didn't expect was what he said next, which was, he said, he was looking for a car. And he said, I've been to a couple of garages. And when I've got there, they've said to me, because my dad and my godfather were really well known in Bradford in Yorkshire at the time, old school entrepreneurs, and everybody knew them. He said, they've been saying to me, oh, they said, aren't you Brian Mitchell's son? I nearly died, but I kept my cool and I just said, oh, don't take any notice. He said, it's a bit weird though, isn't it, don't you think? I said, it is, but don't take any notice. And it looked the spitting image of him.
Yeah.
My understanding is as well that his wife had been messing with his head with that scenario, and it started unraveling, because as well, my dad was his dad in every sense of the word. And my dad didn't know this either till Nicky was older when it came out. And oh man, can you imagine? What a mess. And
that's an awful lot for someone to have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mind blowing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, since then, I've thought of people or somebody like, for instance, Paula Yates, who was married to Bob Geldof, and one of many things, who was a troubled soul as well, wasn't she? And who also found out that who she thought was her dad wasn't her dad. And
that is
some heavy stuff. The hypnotherapist, that's what he meant. He said to me, he said, I can say to you, Tracy, he said that if he was to find out right now who his real biological dad is, he said, I don't know. Yeah, I held on to these notes for dear life as if they were him. And then through work with my counsellor, her and Anne, I can see it so vividly now, she said, we'll shred them, let's shred them. And she actually physically held one side of the note and I held the other. And I did it with all four and let them go. And afterwards, I was like, what the hell was I thinking that I might give them to my son? Talk about burdening him.
Yeah.
And it all seemed a bit nuts. But then, not that long ago in a sense, I got a hypnotherapy client who worked at the registry in Bradford. And through a conversation, I said, would you be able to get a copy of those notes for me? And she did. She did. I've got them again, but I don't attach that. They're not him.
Yeah.
And in fact, when you read them, as I said, they're harrowing because they're so heartbreaking. But when you break them down, they're not really him, because he wasn't in the right mind. And one thing that does stand out that he said, because it was April, and he said, it's starting to snow here. He said, I love the snow.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's got to be so hard for you to go through this. And the love you have for your brother is very evident.
Thank you.
It's heartbreaking to me, that entire storm of your mom being sick and the baby and the wedding and then the off wedding, mm-hmm. all of that coming as it did at once. A boy has a special bond with their mother, and your mom having a terminal illness had to have rocked him to his core. Like every piece that happened with another brick on top. And I think it's so sad that people chose to say that he looked like this other man. I really wish people would keep their opinions to themselves sometimes.
Yeah, me and you both.
It's not anyone else's business.
No, it's not. People are clumsy, aren't they? I'm being polite there. And also, interestingly, Elaine, my mum was in denial right up until her death about what had happened. And she was an amazing woman. This woman was told that she'd got 6 months to live, and she lived another 7 years.
Wow.
And that was a testament to her, to the power of the mind.
Yeah.
And she was bloody minded, and she said to the doctors, must be joking, I'm going nowhere. She was absolutely hell-bent on living. And I remember we would have a fallout, as usual. And I said to her, I was bloody livid. And I said to her, and by the way, I know about Nikki. Oh, I thought she was going to crash the car. I thought, oh, hell. I was been telling you that nonsense. But yeah, totally in denial right up until the end. But I thought, I'd let you know that I know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to blame her for anything. But think pieces of the jigsaw, as they do, started falling into place. Yeah. And she once told him that she was going to terminate him.
Ooh.
Now, can you imagine that on as you say, all these breaks? Now, I know what my mum meant. She was saying to him, and just to think, because she just idolised, I thought he was the favourite. I'm sure he was. And that makes sense now as well.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful story as well, even though he was annoying as a brother. He was a beautiful story. And the point she was trying to make to him was, my God, look what I've got. Thank God I didn't.
Yeah.
Terminate. That's what she was trying to say. But now afterwards, I'm like, oh,
that's not what he heard.
Mother, for God's sake. This is already a fragile guy. All this stuff's happened. And then on the day of his funeral, so my dad had the coffin at his house. Josh, forgive me, that's my son, in the house with the lid off, and spent the last night with my dad. And my dad, on the day of the funeral, my dad's for my mum and my godfather outside having a conversation. And that my dad said, it just absolutely floored him.
Must have gutted him.
Yeah. And I think, what a mess.
It was just going through my head, all the pain that ricocheted off these events. I don't think if you took out any one event, the end would have changed.
I agree.
I think there was just too many of them. You know, that the deck was stacked against him.
Yeah. And I think he will have known, we know things, don't we, as humans? We know things on a really deep level.
Yeah.
And I think he will have known from the day that he was born that there was something
different.
And I know that in one of his notes, he'd also said, one note was to my dad, one note was to everybody as a collective. One was to my mum and one was to his wife. And him and my dad had, things were obviously bubbling under, and him and my dad were having fallouts as well. And Nikki said something about it in my personality. I know that we didn't always see eye to eye. He said, it was me. He was blaming himself. He said, it was my personality. It clashed with everybody's.
Oh.
Which, of course, wasn't true. I can get it. And I remember just not long after he died, and we were sat in the garden at my mum's house, and it was a beautiful sunny day. And she was asleep in the deck chair. And I remember looking at her and thinking, what on earth are you going through? You're dying yourself. Not that she ever used that terminology. She was always keen to say, I'm living with.
Yeah.
From my perspective, this woman has lost her baby.
Yeah.
And still somehow fighting for every last breath. I found that absolutely astonishing.
It's amazing when we see the strength of those around us, because in some ways, Nikki had incredible strength to mask it all so that you didn't really suspect, because he had to be masking all of that for a good long time.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. My mom said, you know, and when we start looking back and reflecting, and she said, but again, we don't know, but she said, he'd stopped doing something in particular. And he'd got shoulder length hair by this time. And as I say, honestly, gorgeous. And he used to go to my mum's house, stand in front of the mirror, throw his head forward and then throw his hair back and say, oh, aren't I gorgeous, or a handsome, or something like that, making a joke. And she realised that he'd stopped doing that.
Oh, wow.
He'd stopped doing that.
Yeah.
It also now answers the in putting his head on my shoulder in the pub and certain things, but how do we even know that they're going to do something like that?
You can't.
It's not possible, is it?
No. No, all the if onlys and woulda and shoulda and coulda will not change things one whit. There's nothing any of us could have done for those that we lose.
Absolutely.
When it becomes helpful is so much earlier than any of us seem to ever know. And now part of doing this show is about telling people that the most important thing we can do for another human being is to listen. And I was on a different podcast and I was saying, if it takes duct tape your mouth, talk to a teen or a young person or a 20-something who seems to be having a hard time, say, write it. I will listen. I will not say anything. I just want to listen. Because that's very often what people are missing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a thing as well about listen, but actually hear.
Yeah.
Don't just listen.
Yeah.
If I say I've had to learn that, all I mean by that is I have to listen in my therapy work. I'm also a little chatterbox, and I love people and I love connecting. I'm quite an extrovert, so I still have to dip it and know when to dip it. I do. I'm an empath, so I can feel when we know when to do that. I've had friends say maybe about a husband situation and he wasn't listening. I'll say he was listening, but he wasn't hearing you.
One of the, early on, you were talking about the word suicide.
Mm.
And it is, over time, in the Catholic religion, it was always the worst sin you could ever commit. It was always handled that way. It is, for the most part, no longer a crime. Mm. Why we don't use the term committed anymore. America changed in 1966 and Canada changed in 1972.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's pretty late. It's still on the books in Virginia, in America. And there are a lot of countries around the world where it is still on the books. Saying took one's life or saying died by suicide is certainly much preferable. But asking someone if they're considering suicide does not cause them to suicide.
No.
It may open a door so that you can have a conversation, could ultimately save that person. And I've coined a term that we want to have the conversation Conversations.
Conversations.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's what we need. And it comes from stepping up to listen. And you're absolutely right. It's being sure that you are hearing what is said. Very often in conversations, people will be so busy anticipating that a break is coming and they're figuring out what they're going to say back. They're not really listening to what's being said.
Excellent.
And it can be super frustrating when you're trying to tell someone something deep or something important. I think as a species, humans need to take into consideration those around us, not even in our family, our tribe, our village, but those people that are marginalized, that are on the periphery. We have a lot of homeless people. We have a lot of what they call unhoused people. And I'm always asking people to give 10 minutes a month and listen. One person. Tell them, I'm going to sit here with you for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
What do you need to say?
Yeah.
And listen with all your heart. And if we do that, I think we will have a much lower number of suicides. Because when you make someone feel seen and heard, they can pay a little more attention to keeping themselves alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to really thank you for what I know has been a painful journey. Yet you painted a beautiful picture of your brother, Nikki. And I betcha he's smiling, knowing that he's handsome.
Yeah.
And knowing that you're sharing his name, because I think it's super important for us to keep their memories alive. And by saying their name and keeping those that we lose alive with our friends and our family, however we have lost that person, I don't think there's a difference. I think we need to keep them all close.
Yeah, for sure.
Forever. And for his daughter, I think that's
important. We're super close. I spoke to her this morning, and she's beautiful in every sense of the word. And I didn't see her for about 10 years because I refused to play along with her mum, if you like. And I can be a bit hot-headed and a bit feisty like that. She'll have to come to me and I'm not doing this and I'm not doing it. We live and learn. I'm still learning. But I also felt that she would come to me and that I wanted her to do that rather than me go chasing or searching. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? She did. It must be 12 years ago now. And I adore her. And I say to her, so much. She's literally a gift.
Yeah.
She's a gift. And I've got Nikki's photograph, the one that I share all the time, on my bedside cabinet. It's always been there. And as I said, it's the one I've been on Christmas Day. But even now, 5 minutes before our interview, I said to him, okay, I need you with me. I know you're with me. I need you with me. But also, I've got a lot to thank him for, Elaine. I've got a lot to thank him for.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't be the person I am now, I wouldn't be where I am now. Would I prefer to have him back? Of course I would. But he's brought me a lot.
And I think that's the best way to honor those we've lost, is to savor their memories.
Yeah. Yeah. And to live our lives
as best
fully it. As best we can, as fully and as best we can.
I think
I'm so grateful to you, honestly.
thank you so much for coming and sharing Nikki with us. And I think it's really important that everybody remembers that suicide is not to be hidden anymore. It's important that we talk about this, that we have those conversations that will help someone. If you're not sure, if somebody, you're not quite sure what's going on with them, please ask. I think
it's important.
Make sure that you have those conversations that are so difficult, but are so important for us to have. I'm Elaine Lindsay. My guest, Tracy Barraclough from the UK, has been with us today. And we salute her brother, Nikki, for being with us as well. Make the very most of your today, every day, and we'll see you next time. Take care, please.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Klum, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach program in Toronto.
The ultimate on casting.
Great.
That's true. If you're just starting a podcast, or if you've been running it for a while, then they'll pull the straw to bring you starting, growing, and monetizing your podcast.
A check.
Strategies.
And the
learning process.
Just saying.
Find new connections.
We hold on tight.
And up with a podcast community. How for what to see you then, Brian?
Do you have a similar chair? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest?
Then forgive.
Please go to nzf42.com. And for our American listeners, that's cf42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.